Of courts, bleachers, vendors, food trucks, and ice-cold air conditioning in August. It's August 1st through 3rd, with adaptive kids and singles on Friday, men's and women's doubles Saturday, and mixed doubles Sunday. Divisions for all ages and levels from 3.0 to 4.5. Visit clemsonchamber.org for more information.
From the lake to the locker room, stay locked in with Clemson football coverage all summer long, only on The Roar.
Come on, sugar, let the good time roll. Hey.
Hour number two of the program here on a Tuesday, right here on The Roar with Fax and Childress and Mike Vaughn. You're listening to Fax on Sports on 105.5, 97.5 The Roar. Appreciate the folks that are tuning in on the podcast as well, or on the app, I should say, and the website, and we'll catch the podcast after the fact. I didn't realize how many people listened to the podcast until the other day, Mike. A lot of people catch that podcast after the fact, so if you're listening after the fact right now, shout out to you. Appreciate you guys tapping into the podcast. But Mike, let's hop right back into the college football discourse, 654-ROAR. And I'm so glad Texter asked me this, 607, gets in and says, why does everybody have Notre Dame in the top 10 when they will be starting a redshirt freshman quarterback in CJ Carr that's unproven? We appreciate you checking in with us. And let me walk this out a little bit, because this is not the only person that's expressed a little bit of confusion with the praise that's being sung for Notre Dame headed into the season. It's year four of the Freeman era in South Bend, and obviously they're coming off of a season where when is the last time Notre Dame had as successful of a season as last year? Has it been a couple decades since Notre Dame's been on the national spotlight like that, playing for a championship, competing in a championship down the stretch, you know, right in the game against a really good Ohio State team? And Riley Leonard battled his tail off and I think won a lot of America over within the process. And I think the same can be said about Marcus Freeman. Like, I almost think the optics have changed towards, like, and the pendulum has swung towards a more positive reception of what Notre Dame football is, with Marcus Freeman as their head coach instead of Brian Kelly. And I like Marcus Freeman. I haven't, you know, ran from that fact either. I think he's a darn good football coach. I picked against him a couple times last year in the playoff, and he proved me wrong. His team found a way to win gritty football games by running the ball and playing defense. And so Texter asked, you know, like, how are they going to win when they don't have a quarterback? I would respond that I don't think they had a very good quarterback last year. Like, I understand what Riley Leonard was able to accomplish, and I have a lot of respect for Riley Leonard, you know, as a college quarterback. But let's get something straight. Riley Leonard is not an NFL-caliber talent. Riley Leonard never had an NFL-caliber arm, and Riley Leonard was a pretty limited passer of the football. Now, really good runner, right? And Angeli is gone, so now it is CJ Carr who, you know, got mop-up duty last year. Reports are that he's ready to lead this offense. And true freshman Blake Hebert, former Clemson commit, steps in as the true freshman to kind of be the backup quarterback. They've also got Kenny Minchie in the room as well, who admittedly I don't know too much about. So I don't want to say that playing quarterback for Notre Dame doesn't matter as much as it does at other schools. But with the infrastructure that's currently in place for Notre Dame and what it takes to play quarterback, and when you look at, you know, what their identity is on both sides of the football and how they want to win games, I think it's a blip on the radar that they're starting a redshirt freshman that's generally pretty inexperienced, because I don't think Riley Leonard raised that team to the level that most think that he did. I think what raised the team to the level that Notre Dame reached last year was Jeremiah Love, who's back in your backfield. And they also are going to have a nice 1-2 punch with him and Jadarian Price once again for Notre Dame in the Fighting Irish. And then you look on the outside, and admittedly, I don't love what I see at wide receiver, but you know what you did in the offseason? You picked up Malachi Fields from Virginia, who was one of the best receivers in the ACC. Jaden Greathouse has another year of eligibility after this as well, and he had a nice little breakout 450-yard, two-touchdown campaign last year. You pick up the former Wisconsin and Cincinnati transfer and a guy like Will Pauling. I think you have a lot of options at wide receiver, and then you have three true freshmen in Micah Gilbert, Elijah Burris, and Cam Williams, who all have intrigue. I like their skill position players, and I like their depth to a certain extent. Offensive line, this is where I love Notre Dame. I think this is a top 10 unit in the country. They did lose a little bit, but they have a chance to be that nasty, you know, tenacious offensive line that sets the tone for their whole group up front once again this season. Now, on the other side of the ball, this is where Notre Dame's going to make their hay. One of the best defenses in the country once again. DBs are pristine. You've got NFL guys, even with Xavier Watts and Benjamin Morrison off to the NFL. The secondary is leaning on returners Adon Schuler and Leonard Moore to take on top safety and corner spots, using college football depth for a lot of this as well. And it's an inexperienced group in comparison to what you've had in years past, right? But that doesn't mean that they're not immensely capable and talented with relation to the Notre Dame defense and defensive backs. I feel good at linebacker, where you've got two juniors in Derek Brown, or Drake Brown, or Bowen rather, and Jalen Snead, who are slated to step into those positions. And then on the D-line, you've got Gabriel Rubio and Jason Anya and Jared Dawson and Botello and Hennish and Traore. All of these guys that have been waiting their turn, kind of like Clemson guys, right? You see these 4 or 5 stars that'll come in, and they'll sit for a couple years in that crock pot, as Coach Sweeney would call it, and then they have breakout years in their junior and senior campaigns. Well, Rubio, Anya, Dawson, Botello, all established and proven players that were in the rotation last year, all having their role increased headed into this year with a chance to make themselves some money in the NFL, and I'm expecting for that to be their primary incentive to go hard and get after it this year. So that's my 5-minute mini breakdown on Notre Dame as to why they're getting this top 10 hype, why they're getting this preseason hype, even though they did lose both of their quarterbacks that we saw last year in Leonard and Angeli. But then the final element of this, Mike, which is truly why I think I'm going to be hyping Notre Dame and probably picking them to the playoff. Let me walk you through this schedule. You're on the road at Miami, okay? And that's difficult. And this, let's preface this by saying, this is a vastly more difficult schedule than Notre Dame typically plays, right? The first half of your schedule is being, preseason rankings are what they are, third most difficult first half strength of schedule in the country. 63rd in second half, but we'll get to that in a second. At Miami, you got Texas A&M at home, Purdue at Arkansas, Boise State, NC State, and USC. But your last 5 games after the open date are at BC, Navy, at Pitt, Cuse, and at Stanford. You essentially can coast your last 5 games headed into the college football playoff if that's a team that is going to have those expectations behind them on a year-to-year basis, which I anticipate Notre Dame to have for the foreseeable future. And I think what Marcus Freeman has established at this program is a very high floor. I think he's raised the floor and the ceiling. I think he does a phenomenal job on the recruiting trail and in the transfer portal of improving his roster on a year-to-year basis. And I'm expecting Notre Dame to be able to pick off some of these upper echelon opponents in a very similar fashion to what they were able to do last year in the regular season. And I think it's going to guide them en route to another college football playoff appearance in South Bend. Notre Dame has kind of won me over as far as a belief factor last year. I had to eat crow with how much I trusted that team. I didn't think Riley Leonard was good enough to win big-time football games like the ones they were playing in last year. He proved me wrong. Marcus Freeman proved me wrong. I'm buying stock in Notre Dame this year, and I'm more than willing to admit when I was wrong about a team, wrong about a coach, wrong about a program. They've won me over with what they've accomplished the last couple years, and I always believed in Freeman. I just don't know if it matters for them. I don't know if the quarterback position matters as much for them as it does for others, Mike. So that's where I'm at on Notre Dame.
It's hard to argue with that, but I think the schedule's a little bit tougher on the front end. I think until they get through October, they've still got some challenges there. Obviously, traveling to Miami, you know, Purdue is never a pushover for Notre Dame with the rivalry that they have there. And Texas A&M coming to town early in September. I think these are all tests. But I agree with you. After October, I think that they've got a much easier path and will be able to nurse some of their wounds as they look forward to another college playoff.
Yeah, definitely in agreement. 654-ROAR is the number if you want to check in on the phone lines or the Adams Coverfing text line. If you've got questions about teams, if you've got questions about players, if you've got questions about the ACC, we are here to answer, and we are here to be your soundboard and provide some information for y'all. So we were talking Miami football before we got into the Notre Dame discourse, and we're continuing to run through ESPN's preseason rankings of the ACC teams. Number 3 on the list from ESPN, the SMU Mustangs. And this is a team that I'm pretty high on headed into the upcoming season. I look at SMU, and I think they're being pretty underrated from a national standpoint, and I also think they're being kind of smeared by the media because they got blown out and trucked by Penn State last year on a big-time stage and in a big-time game in the college football playoff. And I'll walk that out a little bit. People are not giving SMU football enough credit for winning 11 games in the regular season last year, pulling off that comeback, you know, against Clemson in the ACC championship game. Now, obviously, they got their heart broken at the buzzer, which sucks for everybody that's not a Tiger fan. But Let's just say Nolan Hoosier misses, okay? Nolan Hoosier misses the field goal. We're talking about a 12-1 SMU team that's likely a top four seed in the college football playoff. And at that point, their matchup could have been drastically different. They might have not had to go on the road and played Penn State. They would have been playing at a neutral site. And they would have been, you know, having a much more advantageous matchup than the Nittany Lions, who proved throughout the course of the college football playoff that they were nothing to joke with. When I look at SMU, I look at a team that retained an immense amount of talent. I look at a team that is slated to have continuity at quarterback, which is the most important position to have continuity at. And I look at a dynamic playmaker and Kevin Jennings. I look at an offense that was able to retain a ton of their talent from last year. Now, here's my issue, Mike V. The defense might reek this year. The defense might reek. And I don't know. I don't know. This team, for me, is a very interesting case study because I don't believe in their linebackers, and I'm not sure how much I believe in their front seven either. Like, they've got their top defensive linemen are currently slated to be a JUCO and a Texas State transfer, a North Texas transfer. Their leading sack returner has 6 sacks last season, and a lot of their other D-line guys just weren't even in the stat sheet much. Like, they have a ton of these transfers, right? A Purdue and an Auburn transfer, a Georgia transfer, a Missouri transfer, a Texas transfer. But these kids were buried in the depth chart and not playing or producing at those schools. So I think a lot of people will get enamored with the school that you're coming from in the portal, right? It's like, oh, we got a guy from Texas or we got a guy from Georgia. I don't really view that as something of value as of right now for this SMU team. And then I think their linebacker room is pretty weak. And I think the secondary is probably the strength of this defense. But I have concern. I have concern with SMU's defense. We look at the schedule for the Mustangs, who are projected to be the third best team in the ACC this season. East Texas A&M, that's going to be a win. They play Baylor at home. I would anticipate for them to win that one as well. They need to win that one. At Missouri State, then they're at TCU week 4 before a bye week. They get Cuse, Stanford, at Clemson, at Wake, Miami back at home, at BC, open date, Louisville, and at Cal to close things out. Their preseason strength of schedule says that it's the 5th toughest in the country, and I'm guessing that the majority of that weight is being pulled by the trifecta of Clemson, Miami, and Louisville, who they will be projected to lose to all 3 of those teams, is my understanding. As of right now, the Louisville game probably will get closer to a pick'em by the time the line closes, and obviously depending on the results for those respective teams throughout the course of the season. Mike V, where are you at on SMU? It was one of the best stories in college football last year with Rhett Lashley, their first year in Power 4. They make the conference championship game, they go to the playoff, but the big question and the age-old question, can they sustain that level of success?
The things that always stand out to me when I think about these teams, Faxon, is what I've seen for myself. And when I think back to the end of that ACC championship game and how Coach Rhett Lashley and his squad made some adjustments in that second half and tied the ball game up against Clemson, a lot of clutch play from this team. And I think this coaching staff has the ability to adapt and to make some changes as we see them go through this next season. It's going to be interesting. You've mentioned the schedule. Obviously, Baylor there early on. Syracuse, TCU. I think that'll be a test for them in September. But I agree with you. I think that a 9-win season would be a great accomplishment when they face up against teams like Clemson, Miami, and Louisville.
Yeah, I think that SMU probably finds a way to get to 9 or 10. And I think that going on the road to TCU could be more challenging than many may anticipate. And that's also a pretty heated rivalry between SMU and TCU. So that's going to be a game with a lot of emotion. And then you've got Dave Aranda's group coming in. It's going to be a hungry Baylor squad led by Sawyer Robertson at the helm at quarterback. They're going to be ready to get after it and be eager to prove something this year in Waco and bounce back. So this is a more difficult schedule than many may anticipate. And it'll be intriguing to see how Kevin Jennings, the superstar returning quarterback for Southern Methodist, handles the pressure and the expectations, because it's a lot different. We interviewed Kevin Jennings last year, I did, at ACC kickoff up in Charlotte. And Mike, at that point, that young man was not the starting quarterback. You know, I was at the interview that I conducted was under the pretense that he would be the backup quarterback, because he was. He didn't start game 1 for this team. He didn't start game 2 for this team, but he kept working. And he was clearly the better option, and they made the transition, and they really took off after they made that transition to Jennings as their full-time QB1. So I'm excited because it's a lot different that first year where you sense expectations in the offseason, and it's also different being the starting quarterback and being the leader and being responsible for your group throughout the course of the offseason and holding people accountable and things of those sorts. So it'll be interesting to see how everything shakes out for SMU and Dallas. I'm really excited to watch Jennings play football again. I think they've got a chance to be a pretty darn good football team once again. Hey, real quick before a break, we're going to tell you about our friends at Burn Digital, your local full-service digital marketing powerhouse. They handle everything from powerful SEO to cutting-edge digital video campaigns on both the big and small screens. Services like advanced geofencing, they reach your exact local audience. You can get your message seen on connected TV ads just like the pros, and they understand this market and have all the tools to make you shine. Burn Digital is a proud part of the Roar FM family, the same quality and community commitment you know from your favorite station. Combine Burn Digital with an ad campaign on the Roar for potent marketing strategy, and you can discover how Burn Digital can make you stand out by going online to theroarfm.com and clicking on the advertising tab to get in contact. Facts and Childress, Mike Vaughn, continuing hour number two of the program on a Tuesday right after this.
You know, I couldn't stop talking about it to my family and friends. My knees are my trouble spot. But for me to tell them now that I'm doing so much better, they were amazed, and I've been amazed.
QC Kinetics Cellular Therapies. Yes, it is amazing how these non-surgical treatments deliver joint pain relief for patients like Dr. Eric Williams, a successful chiropractor.
Each week, I just started noticing that, you know, I could sleep and not have pain. I could play pickleball. I could do a CrossFit exercise routine.
QC Kinetics revitalizes your joints so you can move again without the pain pills or invasive surgery.
You know, I'm 60 years old, and I want to stay competitive as long as I can. And QC has allowed me to do that. They did me right and really made a difference in my life.
Book your free consultation with QC Kinetics today and experience the difference for yourself.
I like to go, 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 move, move, move.
QC Kinetics.
Call QC Kinetics, 864-448-3772. That's 864-448-3772. 864-448-3772.
At Ingles, we're proud to work with hundreds of local farms and businesses in the communities we call home. Not only does it ensure that you get top-quality, fresh items for your family table, it's a way for us to support the amazing individuals who pour their heart and soul into delivering the very best they can do. Quality, freshness, community, it's all in the bag. Ingles, low prices, love the savings.
Hey Clemson family, I'm Jeff Scott, former assistant coach and proud member of two national championship teams. Success on the football field takes teamwork, vision, and a great game plan. I partnered with fellow Clemson alum Eric Newton to create Newton Scott & Associates. Tigertown to Lake Kiwi, we're your championship team, here to help you buy, sell, or build. When it's time to make your next move, trust the winning team, Newton Scott & Associates. Real estate, the Clemson way. Visit us at newtonscottsc.com.
Twin Peaks is the best in the game. Here, your favorite drafts are poured at a frosty 29 degrees and rare barrel-aged whiskeys are served just the way you want them. It's bigger game days and bolder fight nights. I mean, where else can you find a scratch kitchen that always comes in clutch every day from lunch to late night? Only at Twin Peaks, the number one sports bar.
Twin Peaks Scratch Kitchen scores every time. Dig into hand-smashed burgers, chef-inspired flatbreads, and more at your local Lodge.
Spring is a time of growth, but it can also reveal hidden problems beneath your home. Call Canty Foundation Specialist for a free inspection of the cracks in your walls, uneven floors, and sticking doors. These are signs you shouldn't ignore. Canty provides expert solutions to protect your home. Visit CantyCanFixIt.com or call 864-403-5263. Canty Foundation Specialists.
Canty Can Fix It.
Coach Dabo Sweeney here from the Clemson Tigers. Just like high schools across the upstate, Clemson fans love football. But one thing I love more than football is my family. That's why we talk to our three children about alcohol and other drugs. Alcohol is the leading cause of death among youth. But the truth is, most upstate youth aren't drinking or using drugs. Remind your teenagers that most teens choose to be healthy and drug-free. Talk to your teens about drugs and alcohol. They will listen. For more information, go to phoenixcenter.org.
An official message from Medicare.
I turned 65 this year. I knew it was time to figure out Medicare, and I had questions, like when to enroll and how to enroll. So I went straight to the official source, Medicare.gov, to get the facts about Medicare. I found answers to all my questions, and I'm ready to get started. And so can you. Just go to Medicare.gov to get the real facts about Medicare.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Broadcasting live from the Upcountry Fiber Studios, this is 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar. Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
Are you incensed that you missed one of our daily shows?
And what do we have? We have an altercation of some sort down on the field. Shane Beamer is incensed, irate about something.
Stay calm. You can listen to all of our past shows at theroarfm.com and click on the podcast tab.
I got my head out the sunroof. I'm blasting my favorite tunes. I only got one thing on my mind.
We welcome you back in, everybody. Facts on Sports with Facts and Childress and Mike Vaughn continues here on a Tuesday. We're talking college football, ACC football specifically. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in on the phone lines or the Adams & Co. Roofing text line. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to contribute, or for you to contribute to the program. We're going to be talking, we're going to be shifting gears in this segment as well. We'll be talking a little Major League Baseball, a little Atlanta Braves. We didn't talk like hardly any Atlanta Braves yesterday, and they've got a game tonight that we'll be covering right here on The Roar. And then we've got Brett Siegel from Clutch Points, national NBA coverage coming in the final hour of the program at 11:20 to discuss some NBA offseason moves, and that'll lead us into the final segment of the program. So looking forward to it. About an hour and a half left here on a Tuesday. Let's roll. Mike, Louisville is number 4 in this power rankings from the ESPN on ranking every ACC football team in the preseason. The Cardinals are coming off a successful season last year with Jeff Brohm. They obviously marched into Death Valley and won. They beat Clemson last year, and this is a place in Louisville that's really, really difficult to play, which I don't think a lot of people realize, but it's one of the best environments in college football. They've got a big-time home field advantage. They start out the season with Eastern Kentucky, James Madison, Bowling Green at Pitt, and Virginia. So let me just tell y'all right now, the way that I view things, that Week 8 matchup between Louisville and Miami is probably going to be a nationally ranked and acclaimed one with a lot of eyeballs on it that has a chance of serious implications for who's playing in Charlotte in the ACC championship game, because I essentially view Louisville's first 5 games as freebies. Now, they could trip their feet, right? I'm not trying to disrespect any of the opponents in Virginia and Pitt, but I'm just not super high on those teams coming into this year, and I think Louisville has the supremely more talented roster and the better coaches at those respective destinations and programs. Also, in the back half of the season, they do have to go at Miami, at SMU, and play Clemson, but their other 4 games out of their last 7 are BC, at VT, Cal, and Kentucky. So, like, this is very, very manageable for Jeff Brohm in year 3 at the helm at Louisville. And when you look at their depth chart, they pick up Miller Moss from USC, the former Lincoln Riley quarterback who doesn't have an unbelievably strong arm, but he's accurate with the football, and he's intelligent with the football more times than not. You have a superstar running back in Isaac Brown who went for 1,100 yards and 11 touchdowns last year. We became way too familiar with that young man in Death Valley. Really, really good player. Really, really good player. Now, here's where we start to run into some of the weaknesses with this team. And I would say in totality, skill positions are definitely the big weakness. Your leading receiver is Chris Bell. You pick up Dakari Collins out of the portal from Clemson and NC State, who's now on his 3rd ACC school in 4 years. He's a redshirt senior. Colin Lacey from South Alabama. And then you pick up the Weber State and San Jose State transfer in Trayshun Hurry. This is one of the weakest wide receiver groups in the ACC, is the way that I view it. You had Ja'Cory Brooks last year as your 1A, and Colin Lacey, you know, you lost him last year to a collarbone injury in training camp, so maybe you're hoping that he can provide a little bit more than what he provided in his 5 games last year, which was 18 receptions for 189 yards, but I view this as a pretty big weakness. And then you go to tight end. I think tight end's a pretty big weakness as well. I think you have depth. I think you have guys that can block and can help out with some 12 personnel looks for Isaac Brown in the run game. But I don't view this as a great pass-catching group. And then the offensive line, I think it's pretty pedestrian. I think it's decent. On the defensive side of the football, they have a good D-line and a good linebacker group, and their secondary leaves a lot to be desired. DBs are decent, not great. And the position I'm in right now, Mike V, with this Louisville team is I feel like they are going to be one of the rare teams that matches exactly what the expectation is. And what I mean by that is when I look at the roster, when I look at the coach, when I look at, you know, the foundation that's been established for the Cardinals, I think they're going to beat everybody they're projected to beat and lose everybody they're projected to lose to. And I know that's a very chalky sort of prediction that rarely ever comes to fruition, but I think they start the season 5-0. I don't think they can cut it with Miami. I don't think they can cut it with Clemson, and I don't think they can cut it with SMU. But if you wanted to sell me on the fact that Louisville's going 9-3 this year and their 9 wins are Eastern Kentucky, James Madison, Bowling Green, Pitt, Virginia, Boston College, Virginia Tech, Cal, and Kentucky, yeah, I could 100% buy what you're selling if that's the case, because I do think Louisville is a little bit of a status level above those teams. I just don't think they're good enough to contend for this league. So I would say this is where my cutoff is kind of internally about who has a realistic chance to compete for and or win the ACC. We have kind of a big three is the way I view it, and Clemson, Miami, and SMU. We start to wane into the Louisville's and Florida State's number 5 on this list that we're working off of ESPN and their preseason power rankings for, and I just have a much more difficult time seeing the path. I think they would have to beat 2 out of 3 of Clemson, Miami, and SMU to get to Charlotte in the ACC championship game, and I just simply don't think they're good enough to do that.
I hear what you're saying, and I got to be honest, Faxon, I was going to slide Georgia Tech up a little bit farther in this list because I believe they're, under Coach Key, are competing well. But when I look at this Louisville schedule, I think you're right. I think they're positioned right, just about right. So maybe Georgia Tech has to displace SMU in this list in my mind. But when you look at Coach Brohm coming into his third season as the leader of this team and this schedule, I really can see a 10-2 here for the Cardinals when you take away Clemson and Miami as losses. So this is a very interesting schedule. I feel like it's a little bit easier than I originally thought.
Yeah, it is easy outside of those 3-4 games. And Texter gets in and says, didn't they lose to Kentucky last year? You can't just chalk that up as a win. Yeah, I'm not chalking it up as an automatic win, but I'm not projecting Kentucky to be very good this year, to be candid. We'll get to some SEC talk as well throughout the course of the program today and this week. Texter also mentions that Troy Stellato is at Kentucky now, so that last game of the season will be kind of the battle of former Clemson wide receivers with him and Dakari Collins. That's pretty funny and an interesting storyline to monitor. But yeah, I think we're in agreement and in alignment here on the whole Louisville thing, Mike V. I think that this is a team that's got a pretty high floor, and it's safe to say that they're going to win 7-8 games at minimum based off of what the schedule showcases. But the fate of their season ultimately is reliant upon 4 games. At Miami, Clemson, at SMU, and Kentucky. They play 4 opponents that I think have a realistic chance to beat them. Maybe they're 7-1 in the other 8, or maybe they're 8-0 in the other 8. But they're going to have to win 2 or 3 of those 4 games and handle business against everybody else to have a realistic chance to contend for this league. And I just don't think they're good enough in the trenches on either side of the football to compete like they were last year. I think they took too big of a step back on the offensive line to have the same caliber of run game, regardless of how dynamic a guy like Brown may be out of the backfield and all of the luxury that he can kind of give you with his talent level. So that's where I'm at right now in the Louisville Cardinals. I think it's a really good team. I think it's a team that we're going to look back on at 9-3 or 8-4. But as far as like contending for the league goes, I'm not as sold as to that team can find a way to overcome, you know, a team like a Clemson or a team like an SMU or a team like a Miami. So that's where I'm at as of right now. 654 Roar, if you want to check in. Phone lines and Adams Co. Roofing text line are open. I want to talk Florida State. This is interesting to me that ESPN has Florida State as a top 5 team in the league. And this is not the only outlet I've seen with Florida State getting a little bit of hype throughout the course of the offseason. Now, obviously, last year, it went disastrously. You won 2 games. It was Cal and Charleston Southern. You lost your other 10. DJ Uiagalelei was horrible. Your other quarterback options were arguably worse. Your skill position players just stunk out loud throughout the course of the season. You could never run the ball. You could never pass the ball. It was an absolute freaking disaster last year in Tallahassee. But now you have a clean slate to an extent. You have a new quarterback in the Waycross, Georgia native Thomas Castellanos, who's made national headlines with his commentary this offseason about Alabama, who they have early in the season. I think you have a really good running back tandem in Roy Dell Williams and Cam Davis, but that's going to be relying on whether your offensive line can actually play football at a high enough level to be a competent team this year. Now, they completely overhauled their offensive line in the transfer portal, and if you watched Florida State play football last year, it's pretty evident as to why they did that. Their offensive line was one of the worst in the entire entire country at the Power 4 level. We can sit here and rag on DJ, and that's fun, and it always is. Nobody was succeeding last year in that position at Florida State, in a very similar way to how I'll kind of maintain that DJ got thrown to the wolves to an extent at Clemson with the O-line and the wide receiver play. But last year was a different level of bad in those two quotas for Florida State, which is a large part of why they went 2-10 overall, and Mike Norvell is entering this season on the hot seat. So your question may be, okay, Faxon, well, if they had wide receiver issues last year and skill position player issues last year, what do those skill position players look like this year, and have they upgraded? The answer would be they've improved marginally. They picked up Deuce Robinson, who was my favorite addition of the offseason for Florida State at wide receiver from Southern Cal. They also supplemented that with an addition of Squirrel White, the senior from Tennessee that we became used to seeing in that Orange Bowl when he was a freshman with Joe Milton a couple years back in Miami Gardens, if you guys remember that game against Clemson. And then they've got a guy like LaWayne McCoy, who is a sophomore that they're high on, that saw action sparingly last year. They also picked up a North Carolina transfer in the portal for some depth in Gavin Blackwell. And then at tight end, they've got Landon Thomas. They pick up a transfer in Randy Pittman Jr. from UCF. And then they got a guy coming back to Florida State in Marcus and Douglas that spent last year at Arizona State. That's your breakdown on Florida State on the offensive side of the ball. I think it's a B to B plus offensive group. If I had to put a grading scale on it, I think they're fine. I've said I think Florida State's going to be improved this year because it's hard to not improve from 2-10 and winning one game over a Power 4 opponent when you play in a Power 4 league. So they're going to be better this year. I don't think it's going to be like some significant leap back into contention for this league. On the defensive side of the ball is actually where I love this Florida State team and a lot of the makings of it. I like the D-line a lot. They pick up a Nebraska transfer in James Williams. They pick up Deontay McCray from Western Kentucky. Daryl Jackson Jr. from Miami. Again, Norvell's living and dying by the portal. And I like a lot of these guys. But that does come with some inherent amount of risk, as we've seen throughout the course of the last couple of seasons. Mike Vaughn. Linebacker, I think they're good. Defensive back, I think they're good, not great, and they're deep. And then special teams, I think they're going to suck because they lost Fitzgerald, who was the best kicker in the country, arguably, over the course of the last couple of seasons. And they're going to take a big step back in that element as well. If we want to talk schedule, their preseason strength of schedule says it's going to be number 13. They start out with Bama at home week one. East Texas A&M and Kent State with Virginia to kind of tithe them over, if they will, until Miami, where they're on the road in week six. They play Pitt and Stanford and then Wake Forest, which are three nice get-me-right games, before they're on the road at Clemson, Virginia Tech, at NC State, and at Florida is how Florida State ends it. It's year six for Mike Norvell in Tallahassee, Mike Vaughn. This is one of the most intriguing programs, coaches, quarterbacks, etc. in the country to me. I am so excited to watch Florida State play Alabama this year because we don't know what we're going to get. It's like a box of chocolates. You go 13-0 one year, you bounce back, and you go 2-10 the next year. You're playing portal combat and essentially just trading in rosters at every position each year. You quite literally have no idea what you're going to get from this Florida State team this year. I'll give my record prediction, and we'll play a little win game here in a second, but you know, rolling through everything we just ran through from a player personnel standpoint, and given how the last two seasons have been polar opposites for Mike Norvell and Tallahassee, what are your thoughts on Florida State headed into the upcoming campaign?
You just took me back to my fictional thoughts about Greenbow, Alabama, and a box of chocolates, but I tell you what, welcome back to Doak Campbell, and let's welcome in the Crimson Tide. I think the stadium's supposed to be finished this month, and they're going to welcome in the Crimson Tide to open on August 30th. That's going to be a big wake-up call early for Florida State, but I can't wait until this November 8th game when they come to Death Valley. You remember 2 years ago, Faxon, the heartbreaker, my son and I sitting in the corner of the west end zone, and just a heartbreaker there at the end of that ball game. And I think Cade Klubnik's going to welcome back the Seminoles this year and get a little revenge on that game from 2 years ago. And I can't wait to see. Where's Seminole Ted today? We need to hear from Seminole Ted and see what he's got to say about this schedule coming up.
Yeah, Seminole Ted, Noles fan. This is the bat signal, brother. If y'all are out there listening today here on a Tuesday morning, we'd love to talk some FSU football with you. Let's run through this schedule because I think 7-5, 8-4 is where I'm at on this Florida State group. Bama, I actually think Florida State's going to win this game. Let me come out and say that right now. I called my shot last year with Florida State starting 0-2. I told you guys to take BC when they were plus 21.5 and like plus 1,500 on the money line. I told you guys to take Georgia Tech when they were plus 14.5 and like plus 800 on the money line against Florida State. I had a good radar on this team in the preseason last year. I think they're going to beat Alabama. This is a gut feeling type of thing for me. I think Alabama is going to be riding in with a new quarterback. I think playing mobile quarterbacks early in the season is very, very dangerous when your defense doesn't have a ton of an identity yet and your defense doesn't have a lot of comfortability yet. I don't like playing mobile quarterbacks at all. Early in the season, look at what Castellanos did to Florida State last year. He ran all over them down in Tallahassee. Castellanos, albeit not a great player, he's difficult to game plan for because of the randomness to his game and the creation element that he possesses outside of the pocket and outside of structure. You can have the best call in the world on the defensive side of the football, right? You can have call cover three, have every route blanketed. If Castellanos starts running around and playing backyard football, there's nothing you can do as a DC or a player to stop that other than your individual guys making tackles in space. And you have Florida State with a renovated stadium that's going to be packed out for the first time in a couple of years, with a new quarterback that grew up dreaming of playing for Florida State. There's just so many narratives that are out there that lead me and believe me to think that Florida State is a live dog in this one. So I'm going to take Florida State in that week one matchup. I think they're going to beat East Texas A&M, Kent State, and Virginia pretty comfortably. I think they lose to Miami, and they handle business in the next three, lose to Clemson, and lose to Florida on the way out the door with probably one loss of the games they're projected to win sandwiched in there. I'm going to go 8-4 for Florida State for my early projection. I think they're going to be pretty darn good this year. I'm cautiously buying into what they're selling me in Tallahassee, and I think Mike Norvell is going to do enough to retain his job. And you guys know how wildly critical I was of Florida State in the preseason last year when they were getting top 10 love, and I told you guys I didn't think they were going to a bowl game. I was on the radar last year when it comes to this Florida State team. I think I'm going to be on the money again here this year, and I think they're going to be better than many people anticipate. And I've got that Alabama game circled as one that could really provide them with some national steam because, again, Mike Vaughn, we talk about these games and these moments that could impact optics, that could impact narratives, that could impact where you're ranked. Florida State beats Bama, and it's game on. They have three gimmies in a row after the Bama game, and then they're on the road at Miami, who's likely to be nationally ranked as well. And if they win that one, then they've got 4 weeks until they play Clemson. And the three games and the bye week in between are Pitt, Stanford, and Wake Forest. Like, this schedule stacks up for, if Florida State handles business, them to build themselves some major momentum and steam towards the back half of the season when they start to play the Clemsons and the NC States and the Floridas. So I like Florida State more than most headed into the season. I will say that. I'm cautiously buying in a little bit to what Mike Norvell's selling me down in Tallahassee. We're going to take a quick break on the program. We're going to talk through a four-pack of ACC teams on the other side and give a little bit more brief breakdowns. We're talking Duke, NC State, Georgia Tech, and Virginia Tech on the other side here with Faxon and Mike. Stick with us in hour number two of the program on a Tuesday.
When you're hiring, have you ever felt like you're missing out on meeting truly great candidates for your roles? It seems impossible to find them, but they have to be out there somewhere, right? Well, they're not hard to find when you know where to go, and that place is ZipRecruiter. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/radio. ZipRecruiter helps 10 million people with their job search every day, and because these people are actively looking for jobs just like yours, it's easy to find the right person right away. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. But if you're not using ZipRecruiter, you're missing out. So see what it's like when the impossible is easy. When you go to ZipRecruiter.com/radio right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/radio. ZipRecruiter.com/radio. Never miss out on great candidates with ZipRecruiter.
Are you looking to take your lawn to the next level in 2025? At Carolina Top Dressing, we are committed to serving the upstate and bringing golf course-type practices to your home, including aeration, top dressing, dethatching, and soil conditioning. Also, ask us about our latest top dressing amendment, Carolina Mix, or sign up for any of our turf services by visiting us at carolinatopdressing.com for your free quote. And as always, go Tigers!
Tired of the same old look? Want to get a fresh, stylish haircut for the summer? Rooster's Grooming is the place to be. With highly skilled barbers and a comfortable, relaxed environment, Rooster's Grooming offers a unique grooming experience that's second to none. Whether it's a classic cut or a modern style, their team can make it happen. So why wait? Get your summer haircut at Rooster's Grooming. Make an appointment today by calling 864-884-8920. Rooster's Grooming, where style meets tradition.
When you wake up well-rested on a great mattress, everything becomes clear.
I do have a favorite child.
Things you missed when you were tired finally reveal themselves.
I should have just said the baby was cute.
It's the Actually Really Seriously best sale of the year for real at Mattress Firm. Get a king bed for a queen price. Save up to $700 on Sealy and get a free adjustable base, plus fast free delivery. The right mattress matters. We'll find yours. Restrictions apply. See store or mattressfirm.com for details.
Searching for your dream home? Great Southern Homes is here to make it happen. Whether it's your first house or your forever home, we offer an amazing selection of plans and communities to fit every lifestyle. With endless personalization options and upgrades, you can create a space that's designed to fit your unique taste. From Clemson to Columbia and beyond, we'll help you find the perfect place, whether it's right around the corner or across the state. Discover greatness reimagined and check out our Clemson communities at greatsouthernhomes.com.
Sports talk for people who love sports. Come on, there's no need to complicate things.
It can't be forced. It should just come about effortlessly.
We are the Roar, where every day is game day.
Final segment of hour number two here on a Tuesday with Faxon and Mike talking ACC and college football. If you want to check in at 654-ROAR. Mike, I want to run through a four-pack of ACC teams before we shift gears in the upcoming segment. First team I want to talk about, I was trying to think about how I want to articulate this. I would say that I would borderline go as far as saying that this was the biggest overachieving team in the country last year in Durham, North Carolina, in form of the Duke Blue Devils. You're talking about a program, really, that was kind of scoffed at and left in the dust. Like, Elko leaves the Duke program to go to Texas A&M. They hire Manny Diaz late in the cycle. They lose Riley Leonard to Notre Dame. And everybody's like, man, what are they going to do? So Diaz goes out and he picks up Malik Murphy. And they have a really good season. They win 9 ball games. Manny Diaz probably did the best coaching job in the entire conference, maybe even the entire country last year with what he did with that Duke group in year one. They were unbelievably impressive. They were a couple bounces of the ball away from beating SMU as well. And maybe we're having a different conversation about who's representing the ACC up in Charlotte and playing against Clemson. That's how close Duke was last year. Now this year, their job and their task is going to be a little bit more difficult. But to be candid with y'all, I love the schedule and I love the quarterback. And those are two things that matter a lot in related to success. So looking at this roster, it goes without saying that they lost a lot. But again, they bring in Mensa, who I believe to be a top three quarterback in the portal at minimum. A freshman that was dynamic last year for Tulane, passing and running the football, that really has some unbelievable creation abilities and traits to him. And when you look at the schedule for the Blue Devils, they start out with Elon. They're at home against an Illinois team that actually projects to be really good. That's not a gimme by any means. Then they're at Tulane, the former home of Darian Mensa. NC State, at Cuse, and at Cal is their first six before their bye week. I don't love the way that this breaks with playing Illinois week two, but you do get week zero as an open date, and then you get week one as a tune-up against Elon to feel a little bit more comfortable and confident in your identity headed into a game against Brett Bielema and that Illinois group that projects to be really good. At running back, you pick up an App State transfer that had a couple hundred yards last year in Anderson Castle. It's going to be more of a committee look, and I'm not super high on all the players. And then at receiver, you lost Jordan Moore and Eli Pancole, and now you're going to be relying on some guys that were, again, at these P4 schools that make the drop down, but haven't been super productive, right? Like, a kid that's projected to be their wide receiver one is Andrell Anthony. Anthony was at Michigan and Oklahoma. The issue, he played in one game last year and caught one ball. So, like, there's a lot of examples about like this throughout the ACC where you see SEC, Big Ten skill position players that are taking the drop down, but they haven't been productive at their previous level and in their previous leagues. And for Duke, they're going to have a couple of those prototype type of guys contribute and produce to their team this year if they're going to be as good as they were last year. At tight end, I think they're fine. Nothing to call home about. Again, their projected starter is an Auburn and a Utah transfer in Landon King, who had 8 targets and 3 catches last year. So it's the same type of concept. You've played in a superior league for a little bit. You haven't been able to crack the depth chart. You're going to take a step at the ACC, or take a stab at the ACC, rather, and see if you can make something work at a P4 level in the ACC. Now, your O-line is projected to be the strength of your team. They were good. They were plus in pass pro last year. They're not deep, but they are good with the top flight. I think their D-line is good, and I think that this can be kind of the calling card of this team, is pass rush, run defense, and being established in the trenches. I think their defensive starters are good in the secondary and at linebacker, but again, I worry about the depth on that side of the ball for Duke if they do suffer some injuries. I think Duke is a team that's probably 7-5 is where I'm at on them right now. I think they're going to take a little bit of a step back, even though I think they have a vastly better quarterback, because I don't think the roster around that quarterback is as good this year. And I think there are some tricky spots like that Illinois game where they have a chance to trip their feet. But in totality, I'm buying into what Diaz is selling me in Durham. I think they made the right hire. I think last year was an extraordinary success, and I'm excited to see them try and build on it with Mensah as the kind of the face of the program now, Mike, and they paid him a couple million dollars to come play for Duke next year, is my understanding. So definitely a big-time investment in football up in Durham.
I agree with you here, Faxon. I think we were all surprised to see Coach Diaz lead the Blue Devils, especially after the success that Coach Elko had there. And so I do agree with you on the Illinois game. I think that's going to be a tough challenge early. When you look back at what Illinois did against South Carolina in the Cheez-It Bowl, I think that surprised a lot of us. We thought Carolina would take that game. So that'll be an interesting test after they, of course, take care of business against Elon. And the Blue Devils come to Tigertown on November 1st. So that's another big game to look forward to.
Yeah, definitely a big game to look forward to. And Jed points out on the Adams Co-Roofing text line that Duke has the second-best home record after Clemson in the ACC in the last 3 years, which is 16-3. Definitely something to acknowledge with the Blue Devils. And then to further that point, they do get Illinois in a couple more of those difficult games, or projected to be difficult games, at home. So that's definitely worth acknowledging. I like Duke football. I don't have that same sort of spite or hate, right, as I do for many of the ACC schools. Duke football is cool with me. I'm still salty about 2 years ago to a certain extent, but Duke football is cool. I like what they've got going on. I like the renovations they made to their stadium and what Manny Diaz is doing. And Coach Diaz was really good to us last year at ACC kickoff up in Charlotte, so looking forward to catching up with him and seeing what he's got to say this year here in a couple of weeks. At number 7 on ESPN's list, as we conclude the top 10 of ACC teams by ESPN in the preseason, we have the NC State Wolfpack. I don't know if I agree with that. I think there's a chance NC State might stink. But I will say this. Quarterback that's dynamic and quarterback that's talented gives you an inherently high floor and gives you a little bit of hope as to what your ceiling could be. And that's what you have in relation to NC State. I think C.J. Bailey's an absolute gamer. I think that they have their face of their program, their quarterback of their future. I don't know if he's going to be the savior, because I don't think there's enough funding or talent around him to supplement him with championship-caliber players, but I do think that Bailey's going to rip it up this year for NC State, and I think Doran's got himself a heck of a player up in Raleigh. Their schedule's pretty favorable on the front end, but on the back half, it's definitely very, very difficult with Miami, Florida State, and North Carolina. Georgia Tech before that as well, being their last four games. That's a really difficult slate to close things out with. You could definitely sell me. You know what this is? I think that NC State is going to be the reincarnation of that 2024 Pitt team that started like 7-0 and lost six straight. I don't think it's going to be that drastic. Like, they'll probably drop one early and they'll probably get one late. But this is how the schedule breaks for NC State before we shift gears to Georgia Tech and a couple more teams, Mike. ECU to start things out, Virginia, at Wake, at Duke, Virginia Tech, and Campbell. Those are your first six games. In my opinion, anything shy of 5-1 with your lone loss coming to Duke, and the season might as well be over. Your college football playoff hopes are dead if you lose to ECU, Virginia, Wake Forest, Virginia Tech, or Campbell. That goes without saying. And then things start to get really daunting really fast for Dave Doran and the folks up in Raleigh. Week 7, you're at Notre Dame. Open date, at Pitt, back at home against Georgia Tech, who's better than you. Open date, at Miami, Florida State, North Carolina to close things out. The way that their schedule is breaking, and again, this is preseason, so this is it's fluid. Take this with a grain of salt. Strength of schedule is flawed as is, but it is a nice reference and barometer to give like a general depiction of how difficult your schedule is most of the time. Their full schedule is 45th in the country in strength of schedule, but their first half is 77th and their second half is 18th. Those last six games coming against Notre Dame, Pitt, Georgia Tech, Miami, Florida State, and North Carolina, with three of which coming on the road, I think that spells regression for NC State towards the back half of the season. And I think they're probably a 7-5 football team that drops, you know, four out of their last five or something along those lines. I would maybe even have them as low as 6-6, depending on how a couple other teams in the league stack out. Your thoughts on the Wolfpack, Mike V?
After coming off the 6-7 year last year and Coach Doran entering his 13th season with the Wolfpack, if they don't hit 500 this year, Faxon, what does that say about Coach's seat warming up a little bit?
I think they should fire him if he doesn't get to 500 this year. I don't really see, like, it stagnated pretty drastically up at NC State. It felt like they had some momentum at one point, but I don't think Dave Doran's a very good football coach, and I think that they've kind of reached the pinnacle of what they can reach with him as the head coach at NC State. Do you disagree?
I do not disagree. You know, he had back-to-back 9-4 seasons, 2017-2018. Did have a couple more 9-win seasons, but he's never gotten over that 9-win season.
Mark, don't tell him that, Mike V, because he's going to claim that they beat UCLA in that bowl game that never happened. Don't tell Dave Doran that he's never won 10 games in a season, because he will battle till the cows come home on that one. But you're right. Like, this is a perennial 8-9-win program at NC State, and, you know, I don't think they get to that bar this year or really in the near future. If they can't surround C.J. Bailey with an adequate talent level and they waste that kid, it's over for Dave Doran up in Raleigh at NC State. That's where I'm at on NC State as of right now. Let's shift gears and talk some rambling wreck from Georgia Tech. ESPN's got him 8th in the ACC. I will be much higher on Georgia Tech than that. They start things out at Colorado, which is going to be an intriguing matchup. You've got Caden Salter as the new QB1 out in Boulder, playing for Coach Prime and Deion Sanders in Colorado. Then you're back at home against Gardner Webb and then Clemson in week three. I think that's an under-the-radar trap game for Clemson. I've mentioned that before. Brent Key, really good coach at home, really good coach against ranked opponents. Think he's a guy that's going to be very, very successful in his endeavors at Georgia Tech, at his alma mater. And I think Georgia Tech makes the college football playoff in the next 3 years. So I think that this program is on the ascension. It's on the rise. I said this last year. I love the rambling wreck from Georgia Tech long-term and short-term. I think they're going to beat Temple. They've got Wake Forest, which is how they conclude their first five. So the first five is at Colorado, Gardner Webb, Clemson, Temple, and at Wake. Then they're back at the crib against Virginia Tech after an open date in week seven, at Duke, Cuse, at NC State, at BC, Pittsburgh, and then in Mercedes-Benz, of course, where they sold the game for $10 million to play Georgia Tech in the Benz instead of playing Georgia Tech at Bobby Dodd, which I think is probably a good fiscal decision for a school like Georgia Tech at a time like this, even if it means swallowing your pride for 1 year. $10 million is $10 million, and having that influx into your athletic department is undeniably a good thing. Now, last year, Georgia Tech, I was high on, but my hesitations with backing them to win more than 7 or 8 games was the fact that they had the preseason 4th most difficult schedule in the country. They got thrown to the ringer, the absolute ringer. This year, it's 55th. This is the first year that I feel like Key has a very manageable schedule and a legitimate chance to maybe not contend for the ACC. That still might be a little bit of a stretch, but I think that they can win 8-plus games and take that next little building block in ascension with their program and their status level with the way that I view things for the Ramblin' Wreck this year. They were able to keep Buster Faulkner on the offensive side of the football. This is a team that has a chance to really be a power player in the upcoming campaign. Mike, what are your thoughts? They also hired Blake Gideon to replace Tyler Santucci, and their defense is projected to be pretty good as well. We'll talk a little personnel here shortly, but overall, what are your thoughts on Georgia Tech this year and what they can become?
I agree with you. I like Coach Brent Key. I think he's got them on the rise. It's going to be exciting to see. I don't see many challenges on this schedule outside of Clemson and then obviously Georgia at the end of the season. I think all of these other games, maybe Duke along the way, they will play in Durham on that one, so that will be a test. But I think they're going to be in all of these ball games, and I think they're way underrated for the ACC this year.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I don't understand the people that are sleeping on this team. I think that Buster Faulkner is one of the most accomplished and, you know, what he's going to be able to do in the next couple of seasons as an OC if he stays at Georgia Tech is going to be special. And that's a future P4 head coach in Buster Faulkner. I can almost guarantee that right now. Georgia wanted to hire the guy as their OC at one point, is what reports were saying, and he allegedly turned that down to stay at Georgia Tech. Again, that's speculation, but Faulkner loves what Key's got going on. I think Faulkner is a genius, and I'm expecting Georgia Tech to run it up this year and win 9-plus games. That's where I'm at on the Ramblin' Wreck. I'm really, really freaking high on this team. And Haynes King at quarterback, one of the best in the country and the ACC. Jamal Haynes at running back, the same can be said about him. At wide receiver, you did lose Singleton, but you have Eric Rivers, who's one of the best, projected to be one of the best receivers in the country. You have Malik Rutherford, who's a really good player in the slot. Dean Patterson, Isaiah Canyon, and Rakeem Smith, all good players with a couple recruits you're high on as well. You're deep at tight end and picked up a Georgia transfer. You're decent up front on the O-line. You're good up front on the D-line, and you're good in the secondary. That sounds like a recipe to winning football games to me. And when you combine that with a weak schedule, with the fact that they've been ravaged due to the injury bug the last couple years, which has hindered what they can become, I think Georgia Tech has just scratched the surface of what their potential is the last couple of seasons. And I think this is the year that Brent Key breaks out and establishes himself as not one of just the best coaches in the ACC, but starts to get on some national radars and get some love as one of the best coaches in the country. I love this Georgia Tech team. I am anticipating them to win 9-plus games, and I'm excited to continue to talk about them throughout the course of the season. Mike, let's shift gears and talk some Atlanta Braves in the upcoming hour, if you're good with that. The Braves start a series tonight on the West Coast against the Sacramento A's. Obviously, things have gone very horribly since the last time we've done like a deep Braves breakdown. I've got some thoughts about what they should be doing at the deadline, who they should sell, if there's anybody even to sell at this point, and more. And then we've got Brett Siegel from Clutch Points joining us at 11:20 to talk some NBA and talk some free agency and offseason. He's a guy that's been all on the national scene. He's been very plugged in throughout this whole process in the NBA offseason, and he's going to give us some good nuggets about what all's been going on a little bit behind the scenes in the NBA world and what all we need to be keeping our eye on going forward. So looking forward to the last hour of the program here with Faxon and Mike on a Tuesday on The Roar. We'll be talking Atlanta Braves baseball, NBA, and then wrapping it all up around the horn in the final segment, as always, here from 9 a.m. to noon. Stick with us in the final hour of the program. Braves talk right after this.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson. WAHT AM 1560, Cowpens. 97.5, Spartanburg. We are The Roar.